Welcome back to another episode of One of Us is Talking. I'm so excited for today's episode. I am joined by writer Molly Nussbaum, who wrote some of my favorite moments and scenes throughout the series. If you're ready to learn more about your favorite Nate Wynn scenes, you're in the right place. Without further ado, here's Molly.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of One of Us is Talking. I am here with Molly Nussbaum, and I'm so excited to have her on the show today. How are you today, Molly?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much. I mean, One of Us is Lying, I think it's such a complex show, and I think it is very different from a lot of what we see on TV today. So how does this show differ from any project that you've worked on before?
That's a great question. I've worked on a lot of things that are adapted from books. And I think adaptations are a tricky thing, right? Especially if you're a huge fan of the book, expectations of what it's going to be like on the screen are always there. And I think what I loved about this that felt very different from other adaptations that I've worked on is in the first season, the book gave us like a perfect roadmap. Like, you know, we really didn't want to change a lot. Certain things with any adaptation need to change from book to screen, right? With a book, you can be very internal with a character. You don't have to look at their face and wonder what they're thinking. You can just type in the book, this is what they are thinking and feeling at this time. It needs to be more visual and dynamic. Also, you know, when you're creating a mystery, there's so many great ensemble mystery television shows on right now. So we wanted to make sure it felt different, it felt dynamic. But also, even though the book series obviously goes on, it does not continue with the same characters, at least in a linear fashion. Mm-hmm. We knew that we wanted to have multiple seasons of the show and follow these characters for multiple seasons, which is one of the reasons we sort of changed the ending, because we wanted to make sure that we could follow our murder club going forward. So that was one of the trickier needles to thread, especially because we were all fans of the book and came in the first few weeks. We all had like our own copies that were all noted up and had like post-it notes in them, like a bunch of book club nerds. And it's like, how do we find, or how do we maximize the moments we love from the book, but make sure that they make sense in this different media? And how do we set up these characters to tell ongoing stories that depart from the book? And obviously we go in some very different directions, especially in season two, which is necessary because we want to tell an ongoing story and we love the world and the characters that were set up, but we want to go somewhere else. And it's a lot of trust in the fans that also, you know, most people who love the show loved the book too. And it's been really gratifying to hear people say, you know what, they're two different animals and I love them both, but they're very different. I think they have a lot of spiritual similarities, but making sure that it felt like its own thing was tricky while honoring the great source material that it came from.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I read the book first, so I started as a fan of the book. And then when the TV show came out, that's how I got into it all. But I do have to say that's one of the things I like most, and I know fans do too. They're two separate kind of things now. So you can kind of read the book and enjoy, or the books and enjoy that sense of it, but then you also have this world that is expanded on. And I feel like that's so important to the show.
Oh, well, thank you. And that's such a good way of putting it. I mean, I always joke with the other writers that we're essentially getting paid to do fan fiction because we're all huge fans of the book and the characters in this world. And especially in season two, we really try to honor where that all came from while also saying, hey, we want to do something a little different, especially because, you know, I read the book when it first came out, which is what, 6 years ago now, almost seven.
Yeah.
And I'm older and slightly wiser and different. And I know our audience is too. And I think we want to answer for that and make sure that we're getting a little more complex, a little more messy, a little more real life, I guess. That sounds so vague, but you know, the book does its version so well, we had to kind of find our own lane.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I mean, these characters, all of them, again, so complex, and there's so much to each one. Is there a character from One of Us is Lying that you find the hardest to write for?
Ooh, you know, I actually find, this is a little lame, I find all the adult characters kind of hard to write for, particularly Detective Wheeler, because, you know, she has such an important role in the mystery engine of the show, but she's not who the show is about, right? Like, one of our writers, Anthony, always says, when we're pitching in the room, he's like, no parent scenes. I don't want scenes with parents in them or adults. Like, Anthony's very pro-kid, anti-adult. But it is tricky, right? Like, we need someone who speaks for this sort of like real world solving this case and is an antagonist and an obstacle for our characters that's interesting and dynamic in their own right. But we also don't want to spend too much time with them. So I always find that to be like a very tricky needle to thread. And luckily we have a wonderfully talented actor playing that role who can do so much with just a look or a few lines. But I always feel a little daunted when I have to write a Wheeler scene.
Yeah, and I can see that because she's so important in this show, like you said, but then it's kind of hard because, like, where do you place her in terms, and not take too much screen time away from the main characters, but she's so crucial to their story.
Yeah, but you can't, that's exactly right. And the truth is, like, I don't know that fans would be thrilled to have, like, a whole episode where we're going through Wheeler's day and, like, her side of the equation. But if you don't want it to be repetitive, right? Like, she's always coming up to people and being like, I know you did something, but I can't prove it yet. But you can't do that every time because that becomes one note where it could get sort of like cartoonish and arch. And so, like I said, we're so lucky to have such a talented actor in that role because that could go wrong quickly. And it's something in the writer's room where we're always careful to modulate.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, all these characters, we love them so much and we all have so many favorite scenes. But I have to say one of my favorite is from season 2, episode 7, when Nate and Bronwyn are on the stairs and Bronwyn says, this isn't fighting, this is figuring it out. That has been like one of my all-time favorite scenes of the season.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
I do have to know, how did that come to be? Like that whole... Well,
it makes me so happy for you to say that because that scene almost didn't make the episode.
Heartbroken.
I would have been heartbroken too. Actually, when I saw the first cut of the episode, that scene wasn't in it. It was cut for time. And I remember Erica called me, our showrunner, and she was like, hey, before you watch it, don't freak out. That scene's not in there, because she and I talked about that scene a lot. And, you know, we took it out because we felt like it was slowing things down. So much is happening at the end of that episode. But I felt like for their relationship, you know, it's such an important scene. So your question was, how did that scene come about? I mean, I feel like at this point in the season, it's so great because Bronwyn and Nate, they're finally together. Things seem like they're going well, but obviously things are not going great in their life, like murder craziness wise. And we just want to keep alive that just because these two are together doesn't mean everything's perfect, right? They're still very different people. They have very different lives for so many reasons. It seems like they shouldn't be together. But we also didn't want to make it just constantly like push-pull for no reason. We wanted it to feel messy and complicated in a way that also felt real and emotional. And one of the things we talked about a lot was like, you know, Nate says earlier in the episode, he's like, we're at like their unused vacation home. Like, how can this person and I be together? Like, we are from different worlds. Mm-hmm. And we talked a lot about how Nate's past with his parents and with addiction and all of these things would really impact how he felt about being in conflict. And Bronwyn is so type A. And when she is in conflict, she is there to fix it. And that can be really overwhelming to be around. And so it was just interesting to say, like, how would this impact their relationship? And it was really important to Erica and also to Corey, who I co-wrote the episode with, that, you know, we delve into the idea that just because people are in conflict doesn't mean their relationship is bad. That sometimes when you're in conflict, it doesn't mean like, well, this isn't working, we should just break up. It means there's something to figure out. And actually the exact line that you highlighted, like, this isn't fighting, this is figuring it out, is something my husband says to me frequently and said to me when we were dating, because I have some Nate tendencies where as soon as we would start arguing, I'd be like, well, I guess we should just break up forever because clearly we don't. And he's like, what? You're being insane right now is how I feel. And he's right about that. And it just felt like such a great opportunity to show these characters growing in a way we don't always see teenage relationships grow, which is that when you're in a relationship, it's not perfect all the time. And part of it is saying, hey, we're really different. How do we navigate those differences? And how do we learn more about each other in the process? So that's sort of where that came from. And after I watched the cut without it, and I was very panicked and I missed the scene so much, I said, can we please, please, please put it back in? And Erica said, I really want to put it back in too. Let's figure out a way how to put it back in, much like the line. She said, you know, we're not fighting, we're figuring it out. So I'm so glad we found a way to get it back in there, because I just felt like it showed to the audience, like, this is a real relationship, and this is how it would feel. And this is how are these two people going to continue to figure it out as their lives go on and get more complicated?
Yeah. And it's so amazing that you were able to bring in kind of real life inspiration to that scene. That's so fun to hear. And I love it. And I know so many other fans do. So glad that it made it in the cut. Okay. And I mean, another Nate Wynn scene of yours in season 1, episode 7 was the jail scene. And I thought that one was so important because it kind of stayed truthful to the book, but it also became an original moment for the show. How did you kind of keep the spirit of the book in that scene, but also add in like your own flair?
Yeah, that's a great question. I co-wrote that episode with Anthony Johnston in season 1, and Anthony is so talented. And we were both, I remember when we were talking about that scene, we had the scene from the book, like in front of us, as we often did. And we were like, okay, we want to bring some of these lines and some of the things that are reminiscent, because that's such like an iconic scene. I hate to throw that word around, but it is, it's like an iconic scene in the book. But we really wanted to make it feel, I guess in making it feel our own way, you know, in the way that the show is different from the book, as we've already talked about, is like, how do we make it messy and complicated while still showing people, like, just because things are messy and hard doesn't mean like it's bad and it's over and you should disengage. And so I think we just talked a lot about really like, how do we show the longing that these people have, that they clearly care about each other so much, but they're so different, and expressing that is so difficult when you're really different people. And just, yeah, trying to bring in as much of that like crackling feeling that jumps off the page in the book as possible. And I remember we had done it a couple of times, and then we would read the scene that we wrote, and then we'd read the scene from the book and be like, We gotta do it again.
It's so fun to hear how much goes into these scenes, because it's so seamless on screen. You wouldn't know that there's so much rewriting, and then sometimes the scene doesn't make it. So that's really cool to hear. And then when I talked to Erica, she had told me that the Bronwyn and Janae graveyard scene in season 2, episode 3, that was something that you kind of added in, and it made her laugh. So how did you get that idea? Because again, Bronwyn and Janae, one of my favorite friendships. I loved that scene. So how did that?
Oh, well, thank you. I love that scene too. I mean, I love weird, not weird, unexpected friendship combos, you know, especially with this ensemble, because one of the fun things as we sort of depart the world of the book is like, okay, like what combinations of people have we not seen? And like, is that fun and interesting? And it's also fun because our cast is so wonderful, and they also just like love each other and are all friends. And so like, I think their chemistry really pops on screen. But that scene came about in part because, you know, there's so many Simon Says asks, like Simon Says is constantly giving these challenges. And so as writers, we were like constantly having to come up with more and more asks, which was a really challenging part of season 2. And so when we were really digging into like, what would be torture for Janae? Like what feels different from all the other asks, but super, super specific of like, if you wanted to make this character miserable, we thought about taking it back to Simon. And the graveyard scene, I don't really remember exactly where it came from. I just thought, we don't often get to see these two characters together. And when we do, they're usually like fighting in an ensemble scene, you know, like they're the two strongest voices in the room with the whole murder club together. And I thought, to see Janae in a moment where they're really vulnerable, and that kind of bursts Bronwyn's bubble of like, oh God, that's right, this person has experienced an enormous loss. And I am just thinking about like the Simon Says of it all. Just felt like something really different and something we hadn't seen before. And I don't know, just something really fun. I also was thinking about, just again, to real life inspirations, there was like a graveyard across the street from my high school that I went to. And so like a lot of emo conversations happened in my high school time there. And so I was like, want to bring some of that vibe into this. And I just think, writing for Janae is one of my favorite characters to write for. And a big part of that is because Jess is such a talented actor and it's so fun to write for them. But yeah, I just love putting characters together that we haven't seen before and giving them moments that maybe they don't expect from each other.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think it's so true. Like Janae had that loss of Simon and Bronwyn experienced it too, but in a whole different way because exactly. It wasn't someone Bronwyn was close to. So I think that was really important. And we talk about these characters who we've never really seen together. So that kind of brings up the topic of Janae and Maeve. And they had that scene in season 1, episode 2. And it's at the funeral. And I think when I had watched it the first time, I never expected for that to turn into a romantic storyline because the books never went that way. And was that planned? Was that something you knew when you wrote that scene that they would become?
Not when we first wrote it or pitched it, no. It wasn't like, oh, we should put this scene here because we're setting up a romantic entanglement. It was more in the moment of writing that scene, like these are the like two people kind of on a desert island, right? Like they're the only people that genuinely cared about Simon, that genuinely had a friendship and a relationship with this person, and they don't have anyone to share that with right now. And what a lonely feeling it is to be at this memorial and feel like nobody's there for the person you knew, or that no one knew the person that you cared about so much, but that these two have never really met in a way, or have never had a chance to connect. Like Simon was their only connective tissue. And as the season went on and we were breaking more story, we thought, you know, that is something that would really connect these two, that would give them an unexpected thing to share in. And maybe they don't have anyone else they can be vulnerable with or reminisce about Simon with in a positive way. Also, they're both shit stirrers, you know? They're both like kind of have a bit of an edge to them and are troublemakers and adventurous. And I think whenever we talked about Maeve, especially in the first season, you know, two things that come up a lot that really influence that character are, one, Maeve hates being left out and hates like not feeling taken seriously or included. And two, like this is a character who's survived cancer and has a very different outlook on life and embracing opportunity and challenges and everything that, you know, maybe in high school, a lot of people get overly fixated in or stuck in your head about. And we just felt like Maeve was someone who embraced, like just said yes to things more. So it wasn't something we had in mind when we first wrote that scene, but I do know that, but you know, while we were breaking the season, we kept kind of coming back to that pairing and being like, I don't know, maybe. And then we, you know, as we were filming, it was like, oh my God, they have such great chemistry. We have to.
I think it's interesting because Simon brought them together, but it's also something that kind of pushes them away in season 2 more. So that's something it was fun to see that kind of explored. And I know Maeve and Janae are such a fan favorite couple. They're right up there with Nate Wynn. So it's really fun to see that happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think you might have had one of the most difficult scenes because you had to write the big scenes with FJ and Nate. I feel like that must have been kind of nerve-wracking, especially you didn't know what the fans were going to react with. It was so set with Nate and Bronwyn. So what was it like going into that?
I loved writing those scenes. It was so fun to write Fiona. It was so fun to see, like, to remind ourselves and the audience that it's like, yes, Nate and Bronwyn are together, but Nate's a bad boy and Nate's a flirt and Nate gets around and like, he's not a relationship guy. This is all new for him. And so seeing this kind of maybe side of Nate that we might have known or seen pre bad day in detention in the pilot episode, like this might have been more normal for Nate. It was also just fun to write the character of Fiona, who is really kind of like a sparring partner for Nate, who's funny and weird and like goofy in the same way that he is, and really give him, you know, somebody to have that like witty repartee with that's not Bronwyn. Also, it's a little bit mean to say this, but like, we love writing scenes that make the fans a little anxious because like we love stirring up drama with the fans because we know we're like, ooh, they're gonna hate this, but they're gonna love it, but they're gonna hate it. And you know, we're fans too. So it's like, it's the same thing with the scenes with Evan in a way in season one. It's like, I am pro Nate Wynn always. And so I was like, no, we don't need Evan. Get him out of here. I don't want him. But then like, I also love it because I love the push and the pull of it. That's and what... it's just like with Fiona, it's like, oh, is this like a road not taken? Like, you know, she just symbolizes like a different kind of Nate.
That's what makes it so fun too. I remember the day we all found out about, I guess, Dora Lynn's casting was announced and it was like, going to cause complications for Nate and Bronwyn. No one was thrilled. They're like, oh, great. Like, what's going to happen? But thinking back on those days, that's what made the wait to season two so fun, because it was constantly like all these theories, what's going to happen? So it is true. And even though obviously I'm pro Nate Wynn, like love Nate Wynn, seeing those FJ Nate scenes really, it did bring out the new side of Nate that we never had really seen before. And it's true, he was with Bronwyn and one was a dare, but one time wasn't. So kind of seeing that happen was interesting. I really liked it. And
it is. Like my mom is a big Nate Wynn fan. And so she got pretty annoyed with me when he kissed her on a non-dare scenario. Like, why would you do that? And I was like, Mom, remember, complications are what make for fun television.
I remember watching that and I think I literally let out like a scream and my family, what are you doing? I'm like, you don't get it.
I'm here to torture you. I'm your Simon Says.
It's true. But I think FJ and Nate really did work out, obviously not as a couple, but it worked well in this season and it was great to see. And then we have Addie walking into the school in her Jackie Kennedy outfit. I thought that the music, everything about that was so iconic. Even Addie not really knowing what it was and Maeve explaining it. Where'd that scene idea come from?
Oh boy. I mean, like I said, one of the hardest things about season two was like constantly coming up with new Simon Says asks. We drove ourselves insane. And one of the reasons that made it so hard is like, we don't want them to all feel the same. We want them to feel different. We want them to feel really specific to our characters. And so that ask for Addie changed several times. And I remember feeling really frustrated at that point in the process, because I was like, what am I going to put in here? I'm so sick of coming up with new things. And so whenever I get frustrated like that, I try to step back and be like, what is happening for this character right now? One of the things I love about this show is we always come back to character as much as possible. It's very plotty, but it's about these people. Mm-hmm. And the way I would torture Addie if I was Fiona in this is like, I would recognize she hates being the center of attention right now. You know, we see she hates that everyone's talking about her and with Jake, that either people think she's really upset and broken, like her mom, and like, who comes to see her? Is it Keely? Keely comes to see her. Like, Keely's like really worried about her. But also people at school like Vanessa are like suspicious of her, and Cole thinks that she knows more than she's letting on. And so she just like wants to disappear. So what's the worst thing that could happen to Addie? Being in the spotlight. And once I thought about that, I was like, okay, well, what's a weird way to be in the spotlight? And I don't have a good explanation for why the first thing that popped into my head was she should come in dressed like Jackie Kennedy. I guess that's just my demented brain that I was like, that would be an iconic outfit. And then I also just thought it was a funny joke that I was like, of course Addie would not know who that was. And like, I would just, I don't know. It made me laugh. And I kind of put it in there and thought, we'll change it to something else. And we didn't. And I'm so glad we didn't, because that was like a moment I became very attached to, where she like walks down the hallway and, you know, the veil and the pillbox hat, like how could you not stare at her when she looks like that?
I mean, it worked out so great. It even fit in the episode, and it was kind of like it went from that, then the Nate and FJ kiss. So, I mean, that was real. I think that's one of those scenes that down the line, when the show has been off air for 5-10 years, those are going to be things that people look at and they're like, that's what was happening. Like, that's one of the scenes that people are going to look back on. And we kind of covered it a bit with the it's not fighting, it's figuring out scene. But were there any scenes that you had in scripts that got cut, or any ideas that didn't make it?
Ooh, oh man, so many things end up, you know, having to get cut, or like, I'm sure you talked about in one of your other interviews that we almost got Ashton in this season and then we didn't. So like, there are big things like that. But the one that I can, that pops to mind is actually not from season 2, but in season 1, episode 2 at Simon's memorial, there was a scene I had written where Simon's mom, who's like the mayor, confronts Mrs. Avery. And Mrs. Avery and Bronwyn were talking, and Bronwyn's like trying to figure out if maybe Miss Avery is like a suspect, like maybe Miss Avery did this. And then Simon's mom comes over and interrupts. And so Bronwyn's witness to this conversation, where, I don't know if you're familiar with the movie Jaws, one of my all-time favorite movies.
I'm not, but.
Well, this is your homework tonight. There are many iconic scenes in the movie Jaws, but one of my favorites is this little boy named Alex Kittner gets eaten by the shark, and the mayor is still not closing the beaches in the movie Jaws, right? And so his mom comes out of this little boy's funeral and comes up to the mayor and gives this like really short, but like impassioned speech about like, I just found out that you knew there was a shark and you didn't close the beaches, and that's why my son is dead. And it's so heartbreaking and amazing. And so I said, I wanted to write my Alex Kittner's mom scene. So it was a scene where Simon's mom, Mayor Kelleher, comes over and says to Mrs. Avery, like, you were the adult in the room. You should have been there. Why were you not there to help my son? That he died on the floor of the library because you were negligent, and I hold you responsible for this. And Bronwyn, hearing that and not only seeing that it kind of like breaks Mrs. Avery, which makes her think, okay, maybe she's not responsible for this, because like, but also to see that like Simon's mom is a force to be reckoned with. Because there was a world where we thought maybe that would be a bigger character, and we just never had the space for it because, you know, Anthony hates it when we write scenes for adults, and, you know, what are you going to do? But that was a scene that I really liked, and Dario and Erica always referred to it as my Jaws scene, and they would always say, like, sorry, you can't have a Jaws scene, and I was like, ah. But that was one that I really loved, that we just, you know, that was such a jam-packed episode, we never had time for it.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear all this, because as such a big fan of the show, I love hearing like all these like fun little things that almost made it plot lines that could have been but never were. So that's so, I mean, that would have been a really good one, and seeing how Bronwyn kind of reacted with everyone. And yeah, no, definitely, I love that.
Yeah, I think I got the flip side of the coin in the second season, where Bronwyn in that graveyard scene, right? Like, it's a reminder to the kids that weren't friends with Simon, like, this was a real loss for some people, and the pain from that is going to drive them to do potentially crazy things.
And you also wrote all the Murder Club, Maeve, Vanessa, and Chris together. And I think that was one of the first times we had all of them there. What was that like? I feel like that must have been maybe a little more chaotic because it was so much at once.
It was insanely chaotic. That's in episode 7, which I co-wrote with Corey. And Corey is such a talented writer and so good at making sure everyone's voices feel distinct. But it was a moment that we were so excited to write because it's like, the whole team is together. Like, this is so exciting. The hardest thing in big scenes like that is balance. Like, how do you make sure that you're hearing from everyone, but that you're not like getting confused because you're whipping around so much? It was also fun because how does the group dynamic shift with these new ingredients added, and what does that do for everyone? But yeah, it was insanely chaotic. And I think like the first draft of that scene was probably like 8 pages when it needed to be 3, because it was just like so many people are talking and you want to give everybody a fun moment, a fun line. And like, there's just not enough time. It would have been a 3-hour episode if we were left to our own devices.
Yes. And I think you did see those dynamics shift because you kind of saw Bronwyn start to get more annoyed, and then Maeve showed up and Janae and Maeve weren't getting along well all the time. So that really did happen. And it was great to see everyone together. That was, I know, another fan moment that we all loved. So that was awesome to see. And I mean, all of your episodes, phenomenal. I love them. Some great moments. Do you have any advice for anyone who's looking to go into screenwriting or even the entertainment industry in general?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I think from just a creative standpoint, like, watch everything you can, not just TV. I am actually a bad TV writer, I guess, in that sense. I watch way more movies than I do television. I love going to the theater. I listen to a ton of podcasts and music. I read constantly. Sorry, there's like a weird bug in here. It's freaking me out. Just, you know, I think the more you feed your brain, the more interesting your creative output gets. And so that means embracing as many experiences as possible, whether it means taking a long walk and leaving your headphones at home so you can just like experience what's going on, or watching a really old movie that you're pretty sure you're going to hate just to see if there's something in it that you can find that's exciting, that sparks something for you. And I think from a more practical standpoint, if you want to be in the entertainment industry, if you want to be a writer, you know, cultivate a creative community for yourself. Find other writers, not just people that you think could give you a job one day, but people that are sort of coming up with you. When I was an assistant just out of college, like, I was friends with lots of other assistants, and that's how I actually got my first manager and agent. That was how I got jobs. But they were also people that like read my scripts and gave me notes, and we cheered each other on and commiserated together. And I think more generally, just if you can be process oriented, you know, fall in love with the process, not the results. If you're chasing the results, I think you will be frustrated a lot.
Great advice, because everyone focuses on that end result instead of like what you have to put into it. So that's great to hear. And before we go, I have to ask you, is that the tiger from episode 7?
This is the talking tiger. This is, Corey named him Ho Exotic because, you know, Tiger King, Joe Exotic. And our other EP, Jan Oxenberg, brought him back from New Zealand for me. And now he lives here in my house. And
that's so cool.
All the writers were over here on Friday and we brought him out. It was like episode 7. Except he didn't get destroyed.
I love that. The talking tiger again was such a great moment. I think that was really
well. That's a real pulled from real life. Corey, who I co-wrote the episode with, did Teach for America when he was right out of college. Oh, and they would use restorative circles and things like that in difficult situations when he was teaching. And I said, like, what if you were Chris, like, what would you call like a talking stick or whatever? And he was like, give him a stuffed animal. And I don't know, the talking tiger. And I'm really so exotic.
That's so great. Oh my goodness. Well, Molly, thank you so much. This was such an exciting episode. And thank you for all the information from One of Us is Lying.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you. I'm so glad to be on this, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again to Molly for being such a great guest. And I hope you all enjoyed the episode as much as I did. The next upcoming weeks will be filled with some fan episodes, but One of Us is Talking is here to stay. In the next few months, I'm hoping to have interviews with other show casts and people in the entertainment industry who are up and coming. If you have any suggestions, please make sure to let me know. You can shoot me a message on Instagram at One of Us is Talking, and I am open to all suggestions. Thank you again for tuning in this week, and I'll see you next time.